Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Chronic depression is a serious illness that is shrouded in many misconceptions. Some of these myths contribute to the stigma around depression, but recognizing when you or a loved one has depression is important, and then getting some help. Today, we want to hear about your battles with depression, and we want to do some myth busting and lay out where you can find help here locally. Call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Dr. David Morilak. He is a neuroscientist at UT Health San Antonio, director of the Center for Biomedical Neuroscience, and the endowed chair in the Department of Pharmacology at the UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Morilak, welcome to The Source.
Thanks.
Also with us in the studio, Bibi Rodriguez, board member of the South Texas chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Bibi, it's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And on the line, Hannah Zeller is a program manager for the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. Hannah, welcome to The Source.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
So we started to talk about the misconceptions, you know, people have about depression. People throw around the word depression quite a bit, and it may lose some of its weight when we say I'm depressed. It's the holidays, or I didn't get the thing I wanted, or you know. But depression really is a much more diagnosable, serious condition. Can you talk about that, Dr. Morilak?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. When you talk about clinical depression, you really aren't talking about sadness. We get sad for many reasons, and we get sad for many appropriate reasons. And it can be very intense, but this is something that is really debilitating. It interferes with normal functioning. It can interfere with relationships, with jobs, and it causes distress. It's something that having the condition of depression is in itself very stressful and very disrupting to people's life. I think it's important to recognize that it is an illness and it's biological. And so a lot of the stigma that goes along with that feeling of sort of, I can't manage my own feelings, I can't deal with things, therefore I'm somehow inadequate. It's really important to dispel that, because this is related to brain function and healthy brain function, and it's something that is treatable and is diagnosable. And so if someone is suffering from clinical depression, they should really seek help rather than sort of gutting it out, which you might do if you felt like it was just, you know, kind of a character flaw or something.
Yes, certainly not a character flaw. That's really one of the largest misconceptions that we want to shoot down. We know that this is something that affects so many people, and they really all across all demographics. Correct?
Mm. Oh, yeah. I guess the other myth is that you're somehow unique if you suffer from clinical depression. This is something that will affect about 20% of people some point during their life. And at any one time, something like 7 or 8% of the population has clinical depression. And so people are certainly not isolated or unique or there's something unusual about them.
Bibi Rodriguez, you're with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and I know you have a story that we want to hear from you. We'll get to that a little bit later on, but first of all, we're going to talk about this connection. As we talk about depression, we also have to talk about suicide prevention. Why is that forefront?
The reason that I started volunteering with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is when I lost my son, Jared, to suicide in 2013. And 2014 was my first walk, and that made me feel empowered. You know, when I started walking, it was my way of healing, so to speak. I knew that I had to be the voice for my son, so that was my driving point. That was my driving source for me to get out there and wake up and get up and get dressed and go and do something and try and help others, you know.
But as we talk about depression, we know that over 50% of all people who die from suicide suffer from major depression. So not everyone who commits suicide has depression, and not everyone who has depression will attempt suicide, but there is a large overlap. And Hannah Zeller with Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, this is something we have to keep an eye on as when we deal with people who are talking about their depression, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely something that we need to keep top of mind, because unfortunately, an outcome of untreated depression can be suicide. So that's why at DBSA, we really encourage people to look at all different types of treatment options that they can get connected to. You know, we definitely don't think mental health is one size fits all, so treatment options shouldn't be as well. But that's why it's important, you know, if you are noticing feelings within yourself, or if you're noticing some behavior changes in the people you love, that, you know, you make some time to think about approaching some different treatment options.
But helping people in this way, it takes so much patience. It takes so much of an individual to do that, Hannah. How do we coach people trying to help those who are dealing with depression?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to meet people where they're at. You know, I think that depression is unfortunately a diagnosis that also kind of leaves you with a lot of feelings of guilt, worthlessness, shame. So, you know, there's a way in which we really need to, you know, disconnect that stigma that makes it feel like it's your fault, you're being lazy. But for some people, the reality is it's hard to get out of bed some days, or it's hard to focus at work, or maybe there's a general fatigue that's weighing you down. So, you know, as we kind of dispel stigma, as we focus on not making it a personal defect, we can meet people where they're at and begin those conversations moving towards healing.
So, Hannah, I don't want to talk about the holiday blues. That's something else. But if an individual does have diagnosed chronic depression, does it get worse during the holidays?
You know, it definitely can. And obviously, I'm calling you from Chicago, where our weather really can impact people who live with depression. But, you know, we're at a time of year where the days are shorter. We're getting less light. And so that can really affect people who live with depression, because our circadian rhythms really react to our, you know, environment. So with cooling temperatures, shorter days, and then, you know, the holidays can provide, you know, can be a painful time for people who maybe don't feel like they're connecting as well socially. And that can be a symptom of depression.
So should we reach out more during this time?
Yeah, definitely. If you're seeing someone in your life who maybe is isolating themselves a little bit, it might be, you know, a good time to pick up the phone, or, you know, gently check in, see what's going on.
Make an extra effort to include.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from our listeners. And the number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about depression. If you have a story about your battle with depression, we'd love to hear it. You can remain anonymous. Your story could help others, and it could also provide us, you know, some real life examples of what people can do and how you can beat depression. But it does take effort. It does take help. And there are professionals around you here in San Antonio willing to provide that. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about the battle against depression. More people have this than you'd probably recognize. It is one of the most common serious illnesses that we have in our society, and we need to do a better job of reaching out, dispelling so many of these myths, eliminating the stigma that surrounds depression. It has nothing to do with an individual's character or their resilience audience, this is something that happens to so many people because, well, there's a lot of reasons for that. So let me go to an expert with us right now, Dr. David Morlach. He's with the UT Health San Antonio. He's the director of the Center for Biomedical Neuroscience there. So what do we know about what causes depression?
We really don't know what causes it because we have not yet identified sort of what the basic physiological problem is. But we know that there are a lot of predisposing factors that can sort of set you up for depression should something happen in your life. There are genetic influences, we know that. Hannah mentioned seasonal influences. One of the biggest predisposing factors is stress, chronic stress or early life stress. And that has a lot of different impacts that can make you more susceptible to a second hit, if you will, and to the ultimate development of depression. We were talking during the break about coping skills. And one thing that we've learned in our research about chronic stress is that it changes the way your brain responds to stress, and it causes more passive coping as opposed to active coping. So someone who would sort of stay in bed as a response to a bad day rather than get up and try and deal with a situation that they're faced with or try to overcome a challenge, the act of being passive causes stress to be greater. We know that it makes the physiological response to stress more harmful to the brain. And so just forcing yourself to be active and to cope in that way can help overcome. It becomes kind of a vicious cycle. If you're experiencing depression and you start to learn maladaptive coping, that adds to the stress. And then you get a chronic illness, and living with a chronic illness is a stressor. In fact, it increases inflammation. It increases all sorts of physiological responses that are designed to help you deal with like an immediate threat, but over time can start to do some real damage, including to the parts of the brain that are involved in emotional regulation, in rational thought, in planning, in a lot of the things that have gone wrong in depression.
Well, we do know that this is a chemical issue in the brain. Dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, these are things that the brain produces, and they go into neurotransmitters, and there might be some sort of issue with the chemical flow in the brain there's some sort of something going wrong there, right?
Yeah, well, again, this is kind of, you've mentioned myths. This has been something of a scientific myth. We do know that the drugs that have been effective up to this point in helping with the management or the treatment of depression, most of them target those neurotransmitter systems you mentioned. We call those monoamines, serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine. They're involved in a lot of the processes that have sort of gone wrong in depression. And so really through almost by accident, several decades ago, some of the major drugs were discovered. And they had some effectiveness against depression. They all target those neurotransmitter systems. And so we sort of backward logicked the theory that those systems might have gone wrong and that led to depression, but there's really very little evidence for that. Nobody has really conclusively shown that norepinephrine or serotonin or dopamine isn't working right in depression. Certainly increasing their function with the drugs that we have available to us now is helpful in treating depression. But that's sort of why I said we don't really know the cause. We do know things that can help. We do know systems that are disrupted in the course of depression, but we don't yet know what the cause is.
But it's helpful to know that there is a biological system that may not be functioning the way it's supposed to. This is not a behavioral issue. People do not choose to be depressed. This is something that is happening inside of their brain that they need help to work with.
Absolutely.
And pharmaceuticals are a way to do
yes.
that.
That's a really important point. And we are starting to make some progress in developing new treatments that can take us beyond sort of the monoamines and the currently available drugs. But yes, that is so important to know that it is brain function. And we're starting to see that that's how we can use animals to help in understand the process, because we can study brain function and then relate those changes to what happens in people to help us develop new therapies.
All right, I'm going to go to the phone lines. And the number is 210-614-8980. And Diane is on the line. Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm going to start with my question. How do I find a reason to go on? And I'll ask, now I'm going to say why. I'm a person like hundreds of people in San Antonio and in the world that suffers from chronic pain. And I have for years. I'm just one of those people that can't be fixed. And it gets to me sometimes. I get up and I do and I plan. And sometimes the pain gets in the way. And I'm married. And a lot of days I feel like an anchor around my husband's neck because he is always with me. He's a good support system, but now I see him declining because we don't get up and do and be, and I can't be there for him like I want to be. I'm on an antidepressant, and I find myself fighting most days to find that reason to go on. And I'm just speaking to all the people out there that are going through the same thing, that I guess we just pick ourselves by our bootstraps and we can do it. We've got values still. But anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Diane, thank you for calling in. And I want you to know that by calling in today, you did a good thing, and it was really brave of you to do that. And you are contributing to our conversation, and you're making this all the more real. And I feel so deeply impacted by everything that you're telling us. And I want you to know that we're really taking you and your presence. It's an important part of our conversation today, and thank you for that. I want to go, let's go to B.B. Rodriguez with the San Antonio Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And did that seem familiar to you? Does that, like, have you been there too, right?
Depression?
Yeah.
And that one, absolutely. And I'm not totally immune, you know. I mean, it's something that you have to cope with on a daily basis, or whenever you your mind just goes into that particular set. It's like, I don't want to get up. So what I do is when I feel myself going into deep depression, I just have to, that's when Michelle called. I have a really good group, you know, that helps me with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, our board members. And we stay in contact, all of us do, because 90% of us have lost someone to suicide. So we get together and we start planning. We start planning for others who are going through the same crisis as we're going through, not necessarily a suicide, but just depression in general. And that helps me cope, and it also helps the others that we are touching. Just to talk about it, that's your first step. If you can talk, you may find ways to help yourself.
Hannah Zeller, Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. The question was, how do I find a reason to go on? How do you find an answer for that?
Yeah, I mean, and that can be a very challenging answer, you know. And from our caller, you know, I'm hearing, you know, chronic pain can be very debilitating. And if, you know, you're feeling like it's impacting the relationship, you know, this is time, you know, that it can be hard to reach out to others. But I like what was being said about the value of being supported by a group of folks who understand what you're going through. And that's why at DBSA, our chapter and our support group network is a critical piece of what we do. Our support groups are run by and led by people who live with depression or bipolar, so they get what you're going through. You know, and it really can be hard to reach out when depression can be clouding and making us feel not our best. But sometimes taking those steps, finding people who can understand what you're going through can really be a helpful tool.
Dr. David Morlach, I've read a little bit about how when you have severe chronic depression, that it does also light up the pain receptors in your brain. You are going to feel pain, and maybe any other pain that you may have in your life will be amplified.
Yeah, and you know, the caller highlighted a lot of the things we know about depression, but also she identified a lot of the targets that are there for effective intervention and treatment. One of the cognitive components of depression is you start to see the world through a negative prism. You really start to interpret everything as hopeless and I'm a worthless person. And, you know, she obviously expressed some of that pain. But she also mentioned doing things, getting up, making herself engage. Those actions are part of the process of training your brain to perceive the world in a different way, to see the value in your social relationships, to join a support group, to reach out and talk to other people who can share stories. Just being active starts to literally change the way that your brain works, and it can start to break that negative cycle of seeing everything as negative. You know, sometimes the world isn't a great place, but sometimes it is. A lot of it is just neutral. One of the more effective therapeutic talk therapies is called cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's really intended to train people to stop with the automatic negative view and start to see the value and see the positive and to really start to engage that part. And the cool part from our perspective, that causes changes in the brain. The way that you think and the way that you respond to the world causes changes in the brain that are also self-reinforcing. You start to get stronger connections in those areas that are more related to social activity, to reward, and to active engagement in activities that you would find pleasurable. So she's identified some good places to start.
So talk therapy is beneficial. That is one of the types of way of treating depression. But also, is it having been psychoanalyzed, is that also a part of that?
There are so many different theories of psychiatric therapy. A lot of them target different processes, different interactions between the therapist and the client. The talk therapy that I mentioned, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is really a form of cognitive training, and it's meant to engage the part of the brain that can be helpful in facing depression.
It's like behavioral training for the way that you think.
Yes.
And getting people to think about themselves and the world and their expectations a little bit differently, putting it through a different filter.
Right.
And that has been, but getting people simultaneously also getting pharmaceutical treatments in order to try and get them through that with the intention eventually they will get off the pharmaceuticals.
Right. That is one of the most intensive areas of our research now, is to combine the talk therapy, the cognitive training, with pharmacological or other treatments, TMS, BB mentioned ECT. These are ways to strengthen the processes in the brain that are engaged by the talk therapy that can be beneficial. So if we can find ways to make it faster, to make it more effective, then that's really what we're looking at. And likewise, we think the effect of drugs can be strengthened and hastened by effective behavioral intervention as well.
All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some other therapies that seem to be people being talking about a lot these days, and whether or not this is, they're alternative therapies with the CBD oils or also using some, psychedelic type drugs, that used to be, recreational. Now they're finding some space in the therapeutic world. What about that? And also we want to hear from our listeners. The number is 210-614-8980. We are talking about depression and how this is an actual serious and chronic illness and how there are ways for you to find help and to manage your condition. Again, the number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Norma Elia Cantú's new collection of poetry is all about the border.
There's poems about death, people who drown on the river, but there's also some poems about the indigenous people that were there before we got here, before the Spanish got here.
And the secret to making 150 pounds of tamales.
So I would use my top-loading washing machine.
I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about chronic severe depression as a real illness, a real disease. This is something that impacts a large portion of our population. This is something that people cannot simply snap out of. No one chooses to be depressed. About how, what sort of treatments are available? There is help in San Antonio. We're hearing more and more. You go online and you see these alternative therapies. And I kind of want to shop that around here, this conversation, this part of this conversation, and see what our experts think. And you can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. But first, I'm going to get to a caller because you're waiting for a while here. Denise, welcome to The Source. Denise, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to mention, I'm somebody who's lived with depression for over half my life. I'm 30 years old now. But in researching depression and doing cognitive behavioral therapy, I learned that, and I hope this isn't a myth, I've learned that memory loss is actually prevalent in people who have depression. And I've noticed that in myself. I've forgotten big chunks of my life. Giving birth to my children is a big example. And I just wanted to, I guess, ask, is that a myth, or is that something that truly does happen to people with longstanding depression?
Right. And we also have an email along the same lines from Laura. Debilitating depression came crashing into my life after pregnancy. When I finally sought help, my eyes were open to the fact that I had likely been depressed for a very long time. Even before pregnancy, I had no idea how good I could feel because feeling bad was my normal. I still struggle with depression, but now I'm prepared with tools to pull myself from those dark times. I encourage everyone who thinks they may be struggling not to ignore it and to seek help. So let me ask you this. Let me go first to Hannah Zeller with the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. I think we're talking about low-level, sometimes mainly undiagnosed depression, and it does seem to be something that impacts a lot of individuals. And can that lead to serious and chronic depression, or is this something we should look at separately, or how do you see this, Hannah?
You know, I think people should start thinking about treatment when the concern is coming up. So, you know, if you're starting to feel just kind of down in the dumps more often, generally fatigued, having trouble sleeping, you're noticing changes in yourself, this is a great time to go work with a therapist and try to get connected to a therapist. Now, sometimes, you know, life has a series of events for us that can cause some stressors, and if we go through a big change, say we move, change jobs, have a child, the stressors that we are experiencing at that time may give us some symptoms of depression. And then working with a therapist, you can mitigate long-term feelings of depression and potentially get ahead of what potentially could become more severity in terms of symptoms.
Now, Dr. David Morlach with UT Health San Antonio, our caller brought up the issue of memory loss. Is that something that happens with treatment?
I think the obvious answer is Denise experienced that. And so, yes, it happened. Depression is a complex disease. It is not just mood. There are pretty serious cognitive symptoms as well. The way you think, difficulty with attention, difficulty with memory is common. Problems planning for the future, problems focusing on tasks. These are not mood. These are the way you think. Slowing of your thought is a very common characteristic of depression. So certainly. Wide areas of the brain are affected, and so a lot of different domains of behavior and thought are going to be affected as well. All manner of cognitive issues come up as well.
And the brain plays a lot of tricks on us, and, you know, sometimes if there's a huge gap in your life that you really can't remember, you got to wonder, why are you editing certain things out, and maybe you do need to
find some professional help to explore those areas, and it will be manifesting in your life in other ways.
Mm, yeah. I mean, everybody's experience is unique also. When we're talking about any kind of mental health diagnosis, it really is an interplay of your own individual experience, your own individual genetic background, and things that have happened to you in your life. Everyone's experience is going to be unique.
So on to the item that we teased, which was about some of these alternative treatments. I've saw online, you know, CBD oil is being prescribed for everything, you know, self-prescribed by so many people. But, you know, is there any research behind any of that you know of, Dr. Morlach?
CBD oil is certainly an area of intense research now. But, I would caution people from getting caught up in sort of trends and doing self-medication. It does require research. And a lot of times the stories that you'll hear about effective self-treatment or nutraceuticals or something that is sort of not well understood can be a result of just taking that action and doing something. That in itself can be therapeutic. That can be beneficial.
Taking agency.
Right. And so, you know, we have to be cautious about, I mean, there's a biological signature for the placebo effect. That's a very real component of research that we see in clinical trials. There are, though, some new drugs that are coming out. Denise mentioned postpartum depression. Brexanolone is a new drug that was just approved, I think, within the last year or so for postpartum depression, and it targets a hormonal component that can lead to depression. So, again, a very real biological basis, and some good research has come up with a new therapy that is going to be effective for at least that portion of people with depression. Ketamine is the latest drug that is receiving, again, very intensive research, and it looks like it's going to be very promising.
Now, ketamine, that was like a recreational party drug, right?
Yeah, and that's also why we're doing a lot of research, so we can find a better drug that targets that same mechanism. But it's really been a breakthrough in depression treatment in the last few years. Ketamine, known on the street as Special K, it is a recreational drug. It's also used as an anesthetic. It's a dissociative agent, but in really low doses. These are doses that are sort of below anesthetic levels and not quite below the experience of dissociation. They do have some psychomimetic properties, but ketamine in a single low dose is proven really effective, especially in treatment-resistant depression. These are people who have not responded to other therapies, and ketamine provides almost immediate relief from depression, something that lasts for maybe 4 or 5 days up to about a week, maybe 2 weeks. That is really promising, because one of the problems with traditional antidepressant treatment is that they take so long to kick in and take so long to have effect. Ketamine, it has very rapid effects, but it does have problems, the abuse liability being one of them. And so there's a lot of research into trying to find a better drug that targets that same mechanism.
Now, Martha on Twitter shot us this message. It says, what should I do or say when someone I care about tells me that they think they are depressed? What should I not say? Bibi Rodriguez, what are some things that people should not say?
What everyone should do is listen. You don't give any type of explanation on what you think. The person that is telling you that they're depressed, you need to listen to them and ask, you know, questions every now and then, depending on what their answer is. But no, you need to try and engage them.
Don't provide some like you should knit.
No. I mean, that may come down the line, but no, at first you want them to talk and possibly see what exactly are they depressed about. You know, let them be the one to talk.
All right, let's go back to the phones with Luna. Luna, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I suffered with depression for years. For 20 years, I took Prozac and was just fine, and then I ran out of it. Now I find I'm getting depressed again. And one thing I want to mention is you can't just think it away. You need a qualified doctor of psychiatry or one who is skilled and an expert in diagnosing you and prescribing drugs and watching you on the drug. And the drugs do work. And don't think you can just think it away or trick your brain into thinking different, because that doesn't always work. If you're out of serotonin, you're out. And you may even have a severe vitamin deficiency, and you need to watch your eating habits and make sure you're getting a good diet. And I've come through this. I've tried three times to commit suicide and came through that, was on the medicine for 20 years, and now I've run out of it, and I'm going to go back to a doctor as soon as I can find one. I went to one this morning. Some doctors who are not qualified to see what you're going through do not recognize it, and you need to, if you don't get help, you need to go to a doctor.
Okay, Luna, thank you for those points, and I'm so happy to hear that you're doing a lot better. But let me go to Dr. David Morlach to pick up on something you said there about finding the right doctor who knows, to prescribe what's going on. I mean, this is not like a general practitioner, a GP type of a thing, right?
Well, it can start there. And if you're seeing a general practitioner, that is probably the place to start, because you can get a referral. And you know, the way that our healthcare system and our health management system works, it can be very difficult sometimes to go out and find the right person on your own without working through the system. But talking to somebody, I think for the most part, any general healthcare professional would be trained to recognize someone who comes to them with indications of depression and would provide a good referral. But you're absolutely right. This is not self-management. This is not what your parents recommend you should do, what your friends say you should do. If you really are suffering from depression, you have to see a professional and you have to get help from a qualified therapist.
All right, we're taking another break. We'll come back. We'll take some more of our callers. Number is 210-614-8980. Our topic is severe depression, and there is help available here in San Antonio. We'll find out more about that when we come back. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about depression today, and this is a severe condition, impacts so many people's lives. It can be deadly because it can lead to suicide. How can we identify? How can we steer people to help? How do we provide support for them? And how do we support the supporters? Because it's a lot on them as well. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's go straight to Cam. And Cam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I called in earlier, and I suffer from anxiety and subsequent depression. I'm 67 years old and found it very difficult in the San Antonio area to find good mental health care, especially psychiatrists that take insurance and or Medicare. I did finally find a resource, and I think you people at TPR are also providing a good resource right now with this program. Something else that came to mind is you were talking about medications, and I was wondering why lithium is not prescribed as frequently as it was in the 60s and 70s for bipolar.
Oh, that's a great question, Cam. So let's talk about lithium. Not stuff in your batteries. This is something different.
Yeah. No, this is lithium, the ion. And it is actually an effective mood stabilizer. It's not very useful in the treatment of monopolar or unipolar depression. It really is in the context of bipolar depression, which is characterized by really extreme mood swings from mania to depression, and lithium was very useful for a long time, still is, in controlling that. We have other drugs now that can do the same thing, other mood stabilizers that have proven very useful. And so there's still a place for lithium, though. It's still being used, but we have a broader repertoire.
Now, older people, just aging, you have a drop off in the production of serotonin, right?
Yeah, a lot of neurotransmitters, a lot of hormones change. There is a prevalence of depression and other mental health diagnoses with aging. We also know that there is just neurodegeneration, the kinds of things that leads to age-related cognitive decline and ultimately can lead to dementia. They all contribute to mood regulation as well. Also, general medical illness, systemic inflammation contributes to a susceptibility to depression. And, you know, unfortunately, for those of us who are getting up there in age, those are compounding problems.
So what are some natural things that individuals can do to try to stimulate serotonin or other mood stabilizers? Just, you know, just by being, is diet and exercise, is that what you gotta do?
Yeah, I mean, actually being healthy is good, because if you're generally healthy, your brain will be healthy. You know, things, you know, we talked a little bit about resilience before. Everybody experiences stressors. Everybody experiences challenges and difficulties. And really the trick is, how well do you rebound after you've experienced a grief response or a stress response? And being physically healthy is a part of that. Also, diet is very important. Exercise, social activity, these are all things that contribute not only to general physiological health, but to brain health as well, and can be preventive as well as restorative.
Now, but also we know that depression in youth is a major issue. Teenagers, early 20s, and Hannah Zeller with Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. Do you see a lot of young people who are coming up and saying, I've been depressed as long as I can remember?
Yeah, you know, and we're finding interesting reporting around youth and depression. We're seeing increased rates in which that is being reported. So I feel like the mental health space is really turning our heads to youth to understand what's going on. And I think that there, you know, are a lot of factors that youth are experiencing stressors a little bit early. So this might aggravate and draw out symptoms of depression for young folks.
And Bibi Rodriguez, I know that you lost your son. He was young. 26 years old. And were there signs that he was depressed?
No, there were none at all. Not to the level that, you know, that led him to take his life. I know he was a little sad, but he was seeking help. He just started seeking help. And, he just didn't get there in time.
But youth, the conditions of being able, it's hard to recognize them in younger individuals. Or do they present the same, Dr. Morlach?
You know, I think in general, the symptoms, the changes are going to be similar. They may be expressed differently just because youth are in a different social setting. They have different life responsibilities, et cetera. But, you know, the period of teenage through young adulthood, right through the mid to late 20s, there's so much going on in the brain, in the body. You know, we go through puberty. There's huge hormonal changes. The brain, the cortex, the frontal cortex, doesn't finish developing really into the late 20s. And that is a key part of the brain in mood regulation and in cognition. But also there are so many life changes. People leave home. People go to college. People get their first job. They get married. They have children. These are major life changes that can add to the stress that, compounded with sort of other things that might predispose, leads to a higher incidence.
Okay, Melanie's on the phone. And Melanie, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a couple questions. And the first one pertains to, change in brain chemistry. For example, my father died maybe 8 years ago, and I feel like my mood just kind of changed overnight. And I'm still struggling with that. But my second question, and this is originally what I was thinking of asking when you were talking about medication, I have been to several psychiatrists over the years, and I've lived in many different states, so in many different areas of the United States, and I just kind of felt like I was a guinea pig for different types of drugs. I remember them telling me to stay on one drug for 3 months to feel the full effect, and it left me in this weird zombie dreamlike state. So they took me off that and then put something, gave me something else that kind of made me jittery and bouncy, and it didn't work, and it just sort of turned me off to the medication part of treatment for depression. And I guess my question is, how can I avoid that if I do go back to a doctor?
All right, Melanie, thank you for the call. So Dr. David Morilak, UT Health San Antonio. I mean, there is a bit of trial and error here, right?
It is. You know, the drugs that are still the mainstay of treatment are the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, dual reuptake inhibitors. They're hitting serotonin, norepinephrine, and some get dopamine as well. These are effective drugs. They do, in many cases, work to resolve the issues of mood regulation and other components of depression. But the problem is these neurotransmitters operate throughout the brain and, in fact, throughout the body. And when we talk about side effects or off-target effects, that's only because it's not the effect we're targeting with the drug. But certainly the drugs affect so many other processes as well. And so sometimes you do have to see what side effects, what off-target effects are most tolerable for the individual patient who is being treated. And it is, maybe you go from one to the other because they experience certain kind of reactions to one drug and not to another, or because there's a different balance in which neurotransmitters are being targeted. But, you know, there is sort of a method to the madness, but unfortunately, we have to live with some of the side effects that go along with pharmacological treatment.
Bibi Rodriguez with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. What kind of help is there in San Antonio? I know you're not a hotline. You know, you don't provide those chronic, those critical moment-to-moment services. But, I mean, can you tell us what people can do when they feel like that urgency?
Well, and we don't provide crisis care. What the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does is provide hope and healing for those who have suffered from suicide loss, and also educate the public. And we're doing very well in doing that. And the only reason I can say that is because our walks have gone from 900 to 3,000 in the past 5 years. But me personally, we call the individuals when they call us, you know, and we want to refer them to one or the other. We do call those individuals back just to talk, and we will give them some names of some facilities where they can go and seek help. University Hospital, San Antonio Behavioral Health, there's many, you know, and a lot we do. They do have sliding scales, and a lot of these services are free.
So I imagine some people are reluctant to ask for help because they don't want to be institutionalized. Is that an issue?
No. Not that we've heard. Not that we have heard anybody say that. They don't want to be institutionalized. They want to get help.
And we have to realize, Hannah Zeller, as we wrap up here with Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, these are people who are in pain. They only see the pain. They need help. And it is very hard for anyone who's not gone through this to actually recognize what their situation is. What's the best way we could provide support?
I think, you know, meeting people where they're at. You know, it's the misconception that comes with depression, that it is a personal defect, can make people in our life maybe push on us a little more. You know, we can ask questions that might seem insensitive. You know, you aren't acting like you were before. And there's ways in which we can refocus those conversations to really be present for someone. I think what was said about, you know, really actively listening to someone. And, you know, advice sometimes is helpful. But I think, you know, by really listening to someone, you know, helping to kind of guide them to options, is a great way to go.
Hannah Zeller, Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, Bibi Rodriguez with us, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Dr. David Morilak with the UT Health San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.